Letters to Daniel, Volume 1, Letter 06, The Summer of 73, printed and posted in the year of Christ our King, 2011, in the 8th month, on the 2nd day of the 8th month. Dear Dan, the summer of 1973 was a unique time for me in that I attended 3 Bible camps. One was at Mirror Lake Campground, run by Bethel Temple in Seattle. The other 2 were Assembly of God campgrounds, both on Indian reservations at either end of Washington State, one east and one west. We went to Mirror Lake first, then directly to the one on the Lower Elwha Reservation on the Olympic Peninsula. Then we went home for about a week and then on to Fruitland. While at Mirror Lake, a young lady who seemed to be some sort of a counselor had falsely accused me to my mother behind my back of being a drug user or abuser. Definitely not true. This wasn't new to me in that I had been falsely accused before by my own mom earlier when I was in the 6th grade of being homosexual and selling heroin. And after that, in the summer of 1973, I was accused by my parents of going to a particular neighbor's house after being told not to, resulting in me being grounded to our property for the summer. But this was not true. I did not go to the house or set foot on their property. And there was more. Earlier that year, I had volunteered to type the church bulletin every week since I knew how to type. In those days, in order to make inexpensive local copies, one had to use a typewriter and a special multi-part form that had a sort of vellum on top. Then the typed form was taken to a mimeograph machine and fitted on a rolling drum. A tube of ink was screwed into place, and then, at least on the machine I used, one would either turn a hand crank or flip an electrical switch. The drum would turn and the machine would feed new paper stock, pressing it onto the vellum-covered side of the drum, thereby making duplicate copies of what was on the typed vellum sheet. My mom would bring me up to the church every Saturday to read the transcript left by the church secretary, type the bulletin, make the copies, and set the folded bulletins out ready for Sunday morning service. I don't know if it was the typewriter or me, but every so often, when I would type the letter O, it would make a circle cutout on the vellum instead of just the circle indentation. This resulted in the finished bulletins having O's filled in with ink, looking like someone had taken a black pen and filled them in. It looked kind of like one of those bubble forms that are used to vote on or take tests where the circles need to be filled in with numbered pencil or black ink. After a while of seeing these in the bulletin, my mom started accusing me of communicating with communist operatives, using the filled-in O's as a secret code. It was not clear to me at the time, but now I know that Satan had demonic agents stationed living with our family in order to bring forth those false accusations. After Mirror Lake, we went directly to the Lower Elwha camp. During most of the services there, I was bored because it was the typical Pentecostal meeting format. But during the evenings, there would be visiting evangelists. One of these I liked because he was more intellectual than the others, and he would preach on Bible prophecy. At the last meeting of the camp, Mom, in an act of faithful obedience to Jesus, put all of her cash into the offering plate. That left her only one half tank of gas to get from the Olympic Peninsula to 7 miles east of Redmond, where we lived. My folks did not use credit cards, so that option did not exist in our case. Mom found what appeared to be a shortcut on a roadmap through the Olympic Mountains. It was shorter distance-wise, but took more time as the road was an unpaved Forest Service road. We ended up spending a night or two at a Forest Service campground and then headed home. We finally made it to I-5 after taking the long way around Hood's Canal. Then somewhere just south of Tacoma, the old station wagon ran out of gas. We came to a stop at the side of the freeway about 10 yards in front of an overpass. After praying, my mom sent me to look for a house that would allow me to use the phone. One of Mom's sisters and her family lived in Tacoma at the time, and it was Mom's hope that someone there would be able to come to our aid. I remember that the first house I knocked on had someone home. The lady let me in and allowed me to use the phone. There was no answer, so I said thank you and went back to the car. I think I tried a few more times to use the phone at the house, so I was getting to know the route pretty good. After a while, I noticed a gray military-looking vehicle slowing down and pulling off to the side of the freeway just ahead of us and coming to a stop beneath the overpass. I walked up to the truck and inquired as to what was the problem. The driver said that his engine was overheating. Looking under the hood, he determined that there was a pinhole leak in the radiator. After a short time, the man, who I found out was an employee of the U.S. Navy and was driving a Navy truck, asked if I could help him get some water. And I told him of our predicament, and after some discussion, we came up with this deal. If I would go get some water, he would siphon gas out of the truck's gas tank and to put in Mom's car. So I went back to the same house that I used the phone at and, getting permission, filled a container with water. I returned to our cars and gave the Navy man the water with which he filled his radiator. Then he realized that he did not have any hose to siphon with. One of my brothers looked around and spotted an old length of garden hose. This worked, and the Navy man siphoned enough gas out of his tank to get us all the way home. Now, Mom really wanted to go to the third camp meeting at Fruitland, which we had been to the previous year, but she had no money as she had given in all of her cash in the offering plate at Lower Elwha. However, waiting in the mailbox at home, on the very day of running out of gas, was an envelope with a check in it for enough money to fund the trip, and we were able to go to Fruitland after all. So the moral of this true story is, not only did Jesus turn water into gas, he also turned brokenness into cash. Dan, the Lord reminds me of this from time to time whenever my faith gets challenged. Blessings.
Mr. Wayne, sir, it's terribly late. Hadn't you better retire soon?
Alfred, it's 10 years tonight since my parents were... since I...
Yes, sir, I know. And you've hardly left the house at all these past few weeks.
All these years, my research, my studies... It's time I put them to work, Alfred. I think I'm ready now to fulfill that vow. I have my equipment, my weapons, and my father's fortune to use... Now it's time for action. I've kept my plans secret from the world for a reason. I must have a disguise.
A disguise, huh?
Yes. Criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. So my disguise will be able to strike terror into their hearts. I must be a creature of the night. Black. Mysterious. What's that?
Something outside in the garden. It... Oh, look there, flying against the moon. It's a bat, sir.
A bat? That's it, Alfred. It's an omen. The perfect disguise. I shall become a bat.
And thus was born the Caped Crusader, the figure of the dark, this avenger of evil, the Batman. As the Batman, Bruce Wayne was able to design his own special terrifying symbols. His mask and cape, his utility belt with special tools and weapons, the Batmobile, and the powerful Batplane, all with secret hiding places, enabling him to strike out at will against the forces of evil. Soon, the Batman became a legend in Gotham City and elsewhere. As the strange, secret figure of the Batman swiftly brought criminal after criminal to justice, the police were quick to use his help and rely on the Batman in time of need.